Okay, folks, I'm just gonna kind of start here. That was really beautiful, Susan. A hard act to follow, as they say, but it's all the Dharma. So the third noble truth. And, you know, in a way, you'd think this would be the most popular because it's saying, here's the, possibility. But it's in a way nebulous, hard to know what it means for us, this third noble truth. It's pointing toward, but hard to define what is being said. So in the first sermon, the Buddha described it this way. This, monastics, is the noble truth of the cessation of suffering. It is the remainderless fading away and cessation of that same craving, the giving up and relinquishing of it, freedom from it, non-reliance on it. So I'm going to explore three metaphors that may help kind of put some life to this, because this is all like in negatives, you know, fading, remainderless, fading away, relinquishing. How does that get us towards something? What is this cessation of suffering, nibbana, all about? And it's kind of a paradox, because there's a sense of saying what it isn't, which is how we point towards it without concretizing it. But we also want to have a sense of what it is, or at least where we're going, so we can go there. And the awakening at the core, this nibbana, can seem impossibly far away. But it isn't. It isn't. On the path, in our practice, we get hints of this all the time. Buddhadasa, a great Thai monk, one of the greatest masters of the 20th century, was very emphatic about encouraging our hints of awakening in his wonderful book, Heartwood of the Bodhi Tree. And toward the end of the book, in a discussion about recognizing emptiness, voidness, and its relationship to nibbana, Buddhadasa says, "You must now go and observe yourself until you can grasp that, in fact, you yourself are frequently void. There are many times when you are unconfused and there's a great deal of mindfulness and wisdom. However," he says, "people stupidly skip over such moments, overlook the spontaneous nibbana, and so are unaware of its presence. Even if it is only a very small nibbana, merely a taste, it's exactly the same thing as true and lasting nibbana." So I just think that's beautiful, just really affirming the hints, the tastes that arise in us in our practice. And here's three metaphors that kind of pulling from exploring the suttas that might be helpful, might kind of hit a chord for y'all. One of them has to do with the metaphor of fire and the ending of fire, the cooling opposite of fire, which appears repeatedly, this whole area. There's a famous fire sermon, which I won't go into, but that's talking about the heat of grasping and how that burns us. But in fact, the word nibbana is in ancient India was used to refer to rice that was cooled enough to eat. Buddhadasa writes, "People nowadays will smile at this, but the word commonly used to describe anything which had once been hot but had since cooled down was nibbana. When boiled rice was nibbana, it can be comfortably eaten, while it can't if it's still too hot. Thus the cook might call to those waiting outside, 'Come and eat. The rice is nibbana.'" So think of what happens in our mindfulness practice. You know how when we bring mindfulness to a heated arising, maybe a thinking or emotion, just that mindfulness cools that arising. We may feel the heat of pain or longing in our gut. We may feel pain, burning. But the more we can be mindfulness, even in the middle of that burning, precisely in the middle of that burning, there's cooling because we're not so identified with it. That's what mindfulness does. That's the taste of nibbana to which Buddhadasa was referring. So, you know, even these small steps, every small step of mindfulness is worth cultivating because it adds up into big cooling. Then as metaphors of the unconditioned are also repeated constantly in the suttas referring to another aspect or approach to that which is nibbana. at the very root of dukkha, unsatisfactory, of samsaric existence, is the fact that everything is conditioned. That means everything arises from a prior cause, a prior condition, and in turn causes something else. We're in the middle of the stream of causality all the time. And when we become entwined with things through desire or aversion, we by definition become entwined in this conditioning. But that's why it's impossible to be truly free if we allow ourselves to be entangled by conditioned existence, because it just keeps rolling on. We can't stop it. We can't make the good stuff keep going. Things keep changing by cause and effect. One of the way mindfulness works is we become aware of the dependent arising of things. As we're mindful of an arising within us, we can also see the condition behind the arising and the condition behind that. We start to see the arising and passing of everything. There's a Pali word, sankharas, which refers to conditioned phenomena or formations that have been put together. Bhikkhu Bodhi writes, through the practice of the Buddha's path, the practitioner arrives at the true knowledge of conditioned phenomena, which disables the generation of active sankharas, putting an end to the constructing of a conditioned reality and opening up the door to the deathless, the unconditioned, which is nibbana, final liberation from impermanence and suffering. And then lastly, and perhaps most directly, is the end of craving and clinging, which Susan was talking about, craving and clinging. That tanha, that thirst, is a doorway to nibbana in the ending it. And remember, the Buddha named this craving as a second noble truth, the cause of dukkha. So conversely, we can find freedom or nibbana by seeing through craving, by dropping it, cutting through it. And we see how interlinked this clinging is with conditioned existence. When we're clinging, we're turning outward for some kind of situation and we'll find favorable, but it's doomed. Because the nature of conditioned existence is it's completely undependable and offers no ultimate satisfaction. And in a related aspect, we cling to our sense of self. And through that, we cling, this idea of self, we cling to external conditions. But you know what? The most expensive Ferrari breaks down. The most glorious vacation is rained on or ends. Our happiest moment of success is followed by something different. Just how it is. You can't cling to that stuff. So through our mindfulness, we start to penetrate this clinging. We see the complexity of it. We start to penetrate this selfing. And we see that this sense of self isn't concrete. And there's freedom arises there. We're moving in the direction of nibbana. The Buddha said, when one dwells contemplating danger in things that can be clung to, craving ceases. With the cessation of craving comes cessation of clinging. With the cessation of clinging, cessation of existence, cessation of birth, aging and death, sorrow, lamentation, pain, displeasure, and despair ceases. Such is a cessation of this whole mass of suffering. Destroy lesing. By being content, one is not agitated. Being unagitated, one personally attains nibbana. One understands there is no more for this state of being. And in a different sutta, just to finish, he says, happy indeed are the arhats. See, there's the happy. This is the happy of the third noble truth. No craving can be found in them. Cut off is the conceit I am. Burst asunder is delusion's net. They have reached the unstirred state. Limpid are their minds. They are unsullied in the world. The holy ones without taints.